I think we were at this mic.
Thank you. My name's Anne Goodman. I'm speaking as a former South African and also a peace educator, and I just picking up on the last comment, I thought it was rather ironic that Nelson Mandela was given honorary citizenship the time that Bill C-36 was being debated, because under the law, he and the ANC would have definitely been regarded as terrorist organizations. I did read it. I do want to, though, just say, you mentioned that people are angry. I don't think I'm angry as much as sad. I think we're sad because we see a horrific attack, and then we see a chain of cycle of violence that we can see going to be creating problems for decades to come. We also see the civil liberties, the kind of civil society that have been built up so painstakingly over such a long time being demolished. That makes us very sad. But I'd just like to say the last thing. I'm very pleased Ursula Franklin spoke about idealism and realism, because I've been teaching 155 peace students. This has been a constant discussion. And last week in the Globe and Mail, there was very interesting, what I thought, article by the 100 Nobel laureates, not necessarily peace laureates, talking about exactly the kind of common security that we would like to see in the world, of an end to poverty, an end to environmental degradation. And an article by John Polanyi afterwards saying, stupidity is the problem, idealism is the only answer. Please read it. It makes a lot of sense.
Hello, my name is Ian Woods, and I'm with Alternative Media, and we're trying to get a new magazine off the ground called Stop the War. And we're hoping to have it out by January the 20th, and we want to include articles such as perhaps Professor Mandel's and John McMurtry's. But the idea is that we need distributors, because this is the type of thing that does not fly off the shelves at Chapters. Although some stores have made big orders for this new magazine that's coming out, so I'm looking for distributors. I have handed out a few of these flyers here, and if you would be interested in helping distribute this after January the 20th, let us know, and we'll get you an advance copy so you can decide if you want to distribute it to your friends at a very reasonable cost, and get the word out, because what better way to help people make decisions than to become aware of what's going on, and we've got the articles to back up what we're talking about here today. And I have one question for Eileen Carroll, who actually I ran against up in Barry Simcoe Bradford, so we're kind of pals in that sense. But what should we exactly do to prepare ourselves if we want to go to Kananaskis? Are we allowed to take a gas mask or even a stick with a sign on it? Is that considered a weapon? And should we be prepared for being arrested, or is there going to be a government guideline on what we can do to protest the FTAA? Thank you.
Sam Dinicol, now living in Toronto, but I was also a candidate in the last federal election and ran against a Liberal that I don't know whether he. Whether he actually ran in the election. He didn't come to any all-candidates debates. His name's John Richardson, and we're not really sure what happened to him in Perth, Middlesex. Anyways, my question is for the hard-nosed realist, or our the honorable member here, and sort of loosely related to what's going on now. I know most of us don't buy this premise, but if we are to take at face value the government position, is that we are in a time of crisis. In the World Trade Center attacks, our own citizens were killed, and that puts our security at risk. And if we take that premise and say, well, then we must take extraordinary measures for an extraordinary time, such as billions of dollars into defense and security, such as these new anti-terrorism bills, Bill C-36, among others. When this winter, when homeless people die on our streets and their security is put at risk, will the same sort of fervor go into ensuring their security? And I wonder what the Liberal Party line is on that.
Hi, I'm an activist, a peaceful protester, and an active participant in civil society, which is a necessary element of democracy. But I have to tell you that in the wake of the release of the bill C-36, with its broad and sweeping and ambiguous and malleable terms that define what terrorism is and what it is to commit terrorism and participate in terrorism, I feel terrified. I feel tremendously insecure and tremendously terrified. And if this is an act that is brought to make Canadians feel secure, then indeed it has failed, because I know that I am not alone in feeling tremendously insecure and terrified that by merely being a participant in a necessary aspect of democracy, that I am considered a terrorist. And this is what I have to say.
I'm going to take the next two speakers at this mic, since the people who came on this side came in after them. So go ahead.
I'm kind of ashamed now of the Canadian UN peacekeeping tradition. I think at one time there was some element of pride involved in that. But now if I were to carry a knapsack with a Canadian flag on my back and go to Iraq, I'll be in trouble. And perhaps that will be same in South Asia, especially Pakistan and Afghanistan. So I think Canada, by towing the American line so closely, we have increased insecurity in Canada and for Canadians all over the world. The large distance that we tried to maintain under Trudeau and Pearson with the American neighbor who has a gumption to go anywhere and kick ass was really a good policy in terms of our security. But that policy has been lost by the present administration. In any case, I was in New York on September 11 at United Nations attending a peace conference. And one of the things that was very clear there is that we were thinking, well, after thinking about what happened at Ground Zero, what are the good things that are coming out of what has happened? It's very clear that what is the good thing that has come out is that in spite of Alberta, we will probably meet our Kyoto commitment. And that means, you know, people, North Americans are traveling less, flying less, so we'll consume less gas. So definitely they have provided it with that advantage. And secondly, I would say that now at least I would ask the question to Mr. Mandel, that somebody who has a habit of going to the UN every now and then and associate with people who do not exactly look lily white. What are the chances, if I'm roped into this military tribunal in the United States, that the Canadian government will say, hey, he's a Canadian, come back home, you can't touch him? Okay. So please address that question, because I think many Canadians tend to go to US and will have that fear in their mind.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Golden Rosenberg. I've been with Voice of Women for Peace for the last 35, 40 years. I don't want to even add them up. I first of all want to thank Ursula Franklin for being so wonderful and being such a mentor to so many of us in so many peace organizations over the years. So I wanted to just voice that, as I have many times before. I also wanted to thank the Member of Parliament for coming here today as well. It is not a friendly audience, but I do hope, as Ursula said, that you will take the messages back. What I wanted to mention is that there are many, many such peace meetings going on all over the country, and indeed even through the United States and all over the world. You don't hear this in the media. It's not reflected in the Parliament. But there are so many things going on. Just prior to coming here, I was at a Women in Peace march, and it was quite a wonderful time. They did a wonderful session with the Raging Grannies, and they did a mock arrest of the Raging Grannies, because in the terms of the bill, they might be considered subversive. So they did this mock arrest. But there are many creative ways that groups are trying to raise the issues and speak about them. And if you could reflect this when you go back to your caucus, and if you could say that what you see here is a very small sample of people who are very concerned with peace and justice in the context of what Ursula was talking about. Thanks very much.
Okay, two on this side and two on this side, and then we'll return to the panel.
Yes, I worked in the airline, taxi, and limousine business from 1986 right up until the time of the war in Kuwait, so I'm pretty aware of what's going on in the situation. And I read in the book The Source that on the Israeli soccer team, there's no Arabs or Palestinians allowed. Now, that's like saying to Canadians, to the natives in this country, that George Armstrong wouldn't be allowed to play for the Maple Leafs. And look at the NHL today. You know, I mean, who are those guys? They're not really liked by who we are, and they're not really making progress from what it was years ago. Also, another thing was that there was a Count Volkan of Gretz, who was a Polish Christian crusader who built a castle, a medieval castle in the 1500s in the Middle East. So this has been going on a long time. These are the Crusades. This is not Israel. This goes back to the time of Ben-Hur and Egypt and so on. Now, my feeling was that our present problems go back to the Ayatollah. And ever since these sort of third world super nations have started coming up with their resources, they've been able to buy arms. And the people that are really, like it's Americans that are providing the funds and the Europeans that are providing the buying the oil, and the Arab countries in turn are buying their arms from Russia. It's the Russians that have been getting rich. And if we look today, they're living on the bridle path in Toronto. I mean, that's what's happening.
Okay. Thanks.
It's this dirty capitalism of global oil that we all have to live with.
Thanks. Next.
My name is Derek Paul. I work with Science for Peace. I'm a retired professor. I would like to express my delight that a very brave lady has come down here from the government to face the music. And believe me, madam, there is music to be faced. I've spent a lot of time since 1981 visiting government departments in Ottawa, and there isn't one that I've visited where there aren't internally constructed myths that are upheld. I'm not going to tell you what they are, but they are throughout. Every department has its myths, just as every social group probably has its. I challenge you to find out what some of the ones are in the Department of Foreign Affairs. My question is, another challenge, if you can find out whether Mr. Manley recognizes the U.S. Attack some years ago on Panama when it wanted to arrest the President Noriega, whether he would consider that to have been a terrorist act. That's my question. I don't expect you to know the answer, but I think it will be interesting thing to find out. I'll conclude simply by saying that when I was young, the word terror was always associated with government terror, be it Stalin, Hitler, Herod the Great, Caligula, name it. I was 42 years an academic, and the word itself was corrupted during those two words to be restricted to non-government people who perform terrorist acts. I think there are people in here, you've already heard from some of them, who are bringing the meaning of the word back to where it belongs. Thank you.
Let's keep these two last statements brief, please, just about a minute each. Thank you.
On November 9 and 10th, here at the University of Toronto, the Faculty of Law hosted an important conference called the Security of Freedom, a conference on proposed anti-terrorism act. Not one person, other than those connected with the Liberal Party circles, spoke in favor of the legislation. Even those who tend to be favorable with U.S. and liberal policy hesitated. The vast majority of the legal experts who took part in the proceedings were deeply disturbed and opposed, including people who came from countries who have a history of restructuring the laws in such a way that it changes the entire fabric of the law by introducing the type of legislation as C-36, C-42, C-11, C-44, 45, 35, and so on, that they're all cut from the same piece of cloth. The other thing that, looking at their deliberations out of the conference, we're all left wondering what is at the heart of the Bill C-36 and the subsequent legislation. The opposition was such that the organizers of the conference did something that I've never seen take place in a body such as that. They produced two people to speak at the end of the conference who were not on the agenda. And these were the so-called architect of the bill, Rick Mosley, the assistant deputy minister, and Stanley Cohen, who introduced himself as saying that if Rick Mosley is the architect, then I'm the bricklayer. But what came to the fore in all of the discussion was the fact that it is reflected in everything that's been presented here and all of the other fora in which I've participated recently, and that is this. If these laws are being introduced supposedly for our security, and as Professor Franklin said so eloquently, that it's producing all of this insecurity and that other speakers have addressed, if in the name of defending our so-called values, our so-called way of life, that it changes all the arrangements in the society and actually constitutes an attack on those, then what really is the driving force behind this? In other words, as these two architects said, that the state has a right, said openly that the state has a right to protect itself, and this legislation is part of the right of the Canadian state to protect itself. What can be the possible thinking or reason behind this? If the state has an obligation to protect its citizens and their rights and provide for its well-being, and the legislation constitutes an attack on their rights and their well-being, then it leaves the question to be answered, what is the real agenda behind the purpose of this alleged protecting of the state through this bill?
Thank you. That's clear. That's clear. That's fine. Okay. Next.
I'm a university student, and I know that speaking of age is taboo, but I don't see enough young people here, and yeah, we need to fix that. I find that forums like this are one of the most valuable learning experiences at university. I have a few statements for the MP. As a member of parliament, you have the toughest job in the country, so I thank you for showing up today. I'm a very proud Canadian. I feel very lucky that I was born here. And one of the things that I'm proudest of is that we have shown leadership in the world. We have led the world through peacekeeping, with human rights, with banning landmines. We've done it again and again. We've shown new and different approaches, and we've shown innovation. And I will remain a proud Canadian if my government shows me that it is willing to apply that innovation and that new and different approaches trend to find a peaceful solution to this conflict.